It's time to go to the movies with Matt Olean. And Matt, because of the coronavirus and the slowing of people returning to the movie theaters, even though they're starting to open in lots of places, we are going to talk about movies in history a bit today, because there are some very good years to go back to, and you're particularly fond of 1975.
Yeah, so these are the Oscars for the films released in 75, and just a quick background, Doug, but from 1944 to 2008, there were five Best Picture nominees in all of those years. Now, prior to 44, they could go up to 10, even 12. Some of the early years had only three or four. And then since 2009, they can nominate as many as 10. But in those years where there were just five, when I look back, there always seems to be one or two Best Pick nominees that you're going, what were they thinking? Like Cleopatra in 1963. But the one year that stands out where they just nailed the five was 1975. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Jaws, Dog Day Afternoon, Nashville, and Barry Lyndon. And what separates this year from the others is there isn't a clunker in there, Doug. If you look at the previous year, 74, that's a great year, too. Godfather 2, Chinatown, Lenny the Conversation, and then the fifth one is The Towering Inferno, which is not a bad disaster movie, but to me it's not a Best Picture nominee. The great thing about 75, Doug, is they're all commercial successes and artistic successes both. And if you gathered 20 people in a room, cinephiles, mainstream folks, you can make a case for any one of these being the best movie of the year. And, you know, a lot of people I meet have seen Jaws, they've seen Cuckoo's Nest, they've seen Dog Day Afternoon. But, you know, if you're quarantining and want something else to do, Nashville and Barry Lyndon tend to be the two that maybe not everyone has seen. So this is a great opportunity to look back at that phenomenal year of 75 and maybe think about which one you would have chosen as Best Picture. And the good thing about Oscar night for that year of 75, all five films did manage to win at least one Oscar that night. Cuckoo's Nest was the big winner, picture, director, screenplay, actor, and actress. Barry Lyndon got the technical awards. Jaws got score, sound, and editing. And even Dog Day got screenplay. And Nashville got best song. So they are films you can watch over and over. I think they made the right choice with Cuckoo's Nest. I would probably vote for that of the five. But, you know, even Jaws, which at the time was this huge blockbuster, now we can look back at that as an artistic film. I mean, Spielberg had a lot of stuff going on. We don't see the shark for the first hour. That technique he used, Doug, of having the camera just held above the ocean water, it gives you that sense of dread when people are in the water. Then, of course, John Williams' score, you get that sense of dread, too. You know, Dog Day is really a phenomenal film. Once you start watching it, you can't stop watching it. You know, the bank heist gone wrong with Pacino and John Cazale and Charles Durning as the cop. And Nashville I love because I think it is maybe Robert Altman's best film, the director or the player. Those are my two for him. But it's really a snapshot of the United States in that first post-Watergate year of 1975, a real time capsule of things going on. And Barry Lyndon, even though at the time some complained about the length of the film, I find among Kubrick fans, some rate this near the top for them. I have it kind of in the middle among Kubrick's 13 feature films, but it's so well lit, the artistry, the cinematography. There was no lights used, as you may know, Doug, in the cinematographer John Alcott was instructed by Kubrick just to use natural lighting or candle lighting, which would have been used in the early 1800s. So all five films they're unique in one way or the other.
I will always remember that scene with Robert Shaw in Jaws when they're in the boat waiting to see if the shark shows up, and he tells the story of the USS Indianapolis.
Yes.
It's one of the great monologues of movies that I've ever seen.
It sure is.
I have a special connection to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest because I was in a stage production of that, and I got to play Billy Bibbit,
wow,
the kid who stutters. And it's a great stage play as well. And, of course, Jack Nicholson knocked it out of the park.
It was the role Jack was born to play, wasn't it? And, of course, Kirk Douglas did it on Broadway. But by the time the film came around, he was too old to play McMurphy.
Yep.
And he, you know, his son Michael produced the film. But yeah, was that hard stuttering, learning how to stutter, Doug, for that role? I just have a quick question that popped into my head.
Well, I was at Minnesota State Moorhead at the time, and there was a very high-quality speech and audiology lab on campus, one that taught people how to deal with speech impediments. And so I trained with those professors there to learn how to do that kind of stuttering. It's not easy to do, I have to say that. And incidentally, the fellow who played McMurphy in our stage production was Jerry Verdorn, who went on to perform for 25, 30 years in soap operas. So
yeah.
it was a good show.
And who can forget Louise Fletcher as Ratchet?
Yes.
I mean, what a
Nurse
performance. And she was not terribly famous, you know, but Milos Forman picked her among the famous actresses who did audition for that part. And, you know, she never really reached those heights again. She's a good actress. She's excellent. Her parents were deaf, which is amazing. She mentioned that in her acceptance speech, where she did sign language to her parents, you know, I love you. But so scary as Nurse Ratched. Oh, my goodness. Nightmares.
Well, I think it was a magnificent adaptation of the Ken Kesey novel, which is a very good novel to start with. So think of it, a novel, a stage play, a movie, all of them very strong.
But I don't think Kesey liked the film, did he? That's what I have always heard.
Well, I have heard the same thing, but that often is the case with novelists who have their movies, their works adapted to the movies.
But as we said, if you're looking for something to watch, these are films that you would have to, you know, check your streaming to see if they're available. What would you vote for, Doug? What would your be pick of those five?
Well, it would really be between One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Jaws.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's talk about the movies themselves. We have had this social distancing, which has closed movie theaters nationwide. Now things are easing up a bit. Movie theaters are reopening. Will people go to them?
I do think they'll go, but not in droves right away. And two problems right now, Doug, there's no product to show. All these films that were in theaters, you know, Call of the Wild, Invisible Man, that I reviewed on, you know, Prime Video, are they going to just put those back in theaters? Will people want to see those? All the release dates for big films like Black Widow and the Bond film have been pushed back. So I'm hearing maybe early June, but there's no hurry. They've got to get their standards set, how they're going to open, how they're going to social distance with seating. This is going to be a strange year, Doug, because I'm already hearing rumors and whispers out there among the Oscar people that this year might be so not strong because there's no product that the Oscar people might consider not having the Oscars this year and actually combining the years 2020 and 21, do those awards for early 22, and then they go back to yearly after that. Maybe that won't be necessary. Maybe once the summer starts and these release dates come and all of the Oscar bait films come in late fall, this will be a moot point. But there's a lot of strange things going on already. As you know, Doug, the Oscar people have said anything streaming this year will be eligible for the Oscars, even if it doesn't play in theaters. But great question. Will people come back? This is going to go down as one of the worst box office years in movie history, whatever happens.
Blockbusters are history, at least this year. No, there won't be any record opening weekends.
No, I doubt it.
Count them. So the pipeline is clogged a bit right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is this going to force some theaters to close? I mean, the economics are tough.
I think small theaters certainly could be in big trouble. That's just dollars and cents there. The big theaters will survive, I think. You know, Marcus and you know, Touchmark and AMC and those kind of things. You know, fortunately in this state, some of the smaller theaters, independent theaters, do have good support from the community.
Well, I also think movies typically reflect the times that they're produced in, like the Depression or the war years. So I'm wondering what kinds of movies will distributors want to offer during a time of pandemic? I mean, probably something that is a little diversionary, if you will.
Another great question. I'm not sure. You know, we did talk about the delayed release dates of Black Widow and the Bond film and some others like that. And those have been pushed back. I mean, into the fall. So where's the summer product that's new? It is a great question, Doug. And I think, as I said earlier, I think the James Bond people made a great early decision. They decided, I think it was in February, where they said, we're not going to do this. We're going to do this in November. Part of that was the China market. No question about it. Bond is very big there. I think the Bond film will do very well when it opens in November. They've pushed it back far enough that they feel comfortable that people will flock to those theaters to see James Bond.
Well, we'll have to leave it with that, but there are lots of questions that will be answered by whatever happens this year. We always check in with our movie reviewer, Matt Olean, and it's always a pleasure, Matt.
Thanks, Doug.